Okay, we're going to go ahead and call the House Finance Committee meeting to order. The time is, oh my gosh, 1:45. Apologize for the late start. Okay, with us we have Representative Moses, Representative Holm, Representative Kelly, Representative Foster, Co-Chairman, Representative Schnell, Vice Chairman Representative Stokes, and Representative Hacker. Others will come be joining us later. Okay, on today's schedule, we're going to, as you know, try to clean up some bills that have been that we've previously heard, and then of course later on this afternoon, 4:30, take up the operating budget.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Are we going to clean them up or just pass them out?
Well, maybe both.
Okay,
Representative Stoltz, we'll see how things go here. Okay, first on the list is House Bill 108, and that is the water sewer utilities. Let's see. I'm going to ask Ms. Cunningham if she would join us, please.
Yeah.
And I want to welcome Representative Wyra. And I think for purposes of discussion, let's go ahead and adopt the new CS. So if I could have a motion to adopt the F version, please.
I'll go ahead and move on. Adopt CS 18-08-45-5-5.
Okay. I'm not sure either what he said, but
he's a pilot.
It's all sharp, got it. Okay. We do have the F. Craver version in front of us, and the changes made reflect two amendments that were adopted yesterday by this committee. Ms. Cunningham, do you want to explain the new CS, please?
Yes, for the record, Suzanne Cunningham, staff to Co-Chairman Meyer. The CS that is before the committee incorporates the two amendments that were passed yesterday. The first being it deleted the intent section, and the second is the addition of the contingency language under section 3 on page 2. In reviewing the CS, it was brought to our attention by a representative of the municipality of Anchorage that a small technical change does need to be made under section 3. On page 2, line 28, where it says appointed, it needs to be deleted and the word approved needs to be inserted. On page 3, line 5, the same change needs to occur. The word appointed needs to be deleted and the word approved needs to be inserted. This change needs to occur because the Anchorage Charter does not allow for the governing body, which is the assembly, to appoint members. They are allowed to approve appointments, much like the legislature is with the governor who makes appointments to boards and commissions, and the legislature approves them.
Okay, Ms. Cunningham, one was on page 3, line 5. What was the first one? I'm sorry.
Page 2,
yep.
Line 28.
And that should be approved. Okay. Very good. Question, Representative Stoltz.
Thank you, Chairman Meyer. Ms. Cunningham, in that language approved, does that implicitly mean that appointed and confirmed, or is that a leap I'm taking that may not be correct?
It implicitly means appointed and approved. The mayor will
approve being confirmed?
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, I believe so.
Go ahead, Representative Stoltz. See if I get what you're getting, Mr. Representative Stoltz. If the person is appointed, they're not authorized to make the decision until they've been approved. So it has to be both, appointed and approved, not simply appointed. Is that correct? Is that what you're concerned about?
Mr. Chairman, that's right. Yes, that's maybe semantics that I just want to make sure we pass out a good, tidy bill.
I think that was Marbury versus Madison as well.
There you go.
Okay.
More like losers be weepers here.
All right. Representing Holm.
Yes, and following on with James Madison's approach, what happens if they're not approved? Does that mean that the body cannot function if they're not all approved?
Well, we do have Mr. Primo on teleconference, or did you want to take a shot at that? I think if they're not approved, then the mayor has to bring others to the assembly. But go ahead.
Through the chair, I believe that's correct. I believe that the mayor would have to make appointments to come before the assembly for approval. to fill those spots on the board.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Barlow.
And what I when I vote for this bill with these amendments, it's my understanding that there could be members on that board or that body, public body. Some would be appointed and approved. Some may be appointed but not yet approved. And those who were appointed but not yet approved couldn't participate in the decision until they had been approved.
Could not vote.
They could not. Yeah. They could not. Their vote could not count in establishing this until they had been also approved. They could sit there, but their vote wouldn't count.
That, Representative Barber, that would be my understanding too. Just my limited experience with this when I was on the assembly, that unless the assembly approved it, they were not a voting member, even though they were appointed by the mayor. But Mr. Primo, are you online?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Can you bring any additional clarification to the question?
I think I can. I think everyone is basically correct in their understanding. The powers of appointment rest with the mayor. The powers of approval and or confirmation, same word, rest with the assembly. And until they are a approved or a confirmed member of the board by the assembly, they are a non-voting member of the board. In other words, they are not a member of the board. Okay. They are just like any other public participant at the hearing.
Great. Thank you. And for the record, Mark, can you give us your name and affiliation?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. This is Mark Primo, the Anchorage, Municipality of Anchorage Water and Wastewater Utility.
Great. Thank you.
Questions for Mr. Primo?
Okay. I think you answered the question. Thank you. And Representative Holmes, you're okay with this?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am. I just was trying to go down a rabbit trail that maybe isn't a rabbit trail to go down here, but my thought process was one that before we didn't talk about the specifics as to the makeup of the board because we felt that a Title 18 or the authority of the municipality to control the board makeup was one thing, and maybe this follows down that wrong path. And I was just thinking in terms of if in fact you couldn't get the approval of the members of the board, if you had seven and you only had four approved, you would be making these decisions without having the full complement of that board in play. So I don't know where that goes, but it was just thought process I was thinking about. So thanks.
Okay. No other questions? Let's see, who else do we have on? Okay, we also have Kate's with us again today. So if there's any questions for RCA, she's also available for any questions. Any other discussion, comment on this particular bill as amended? Or this CS that's before us? Representative Kelly.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Since Ms. Guyard is on the line, I'd like to ask, and I apologize, I wasn't here for the Finance Committee consideration of this earlier, and maybe it has already been answered. My concern is this: that if Anchorage Utility opts out, and maybe the fiscal note explains it all, but maybe just a simple yes, I assume that what we've done is we've laid off those folks necessary or taken the expenses out of the commission associated with regulating this utility, that those will not be borne by other utilities. A simple yes would be just great if that's the case.
Through the chair, Representative, it would be my desire to give you a simple yes.
Kate, name and affiliation, please.
I'm sorry, sir. Okay. Kate Dyer, Chairman of the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. What I can tell you is that when AWWU or any utility becomes unregulated, their revenues come out of the pool of revenues by which we calculate our RCC, our regulatory cost charges. So the pool of the revenues that we assess gets smaller. As a result, our revenues get smaller. There's not really a direct correlation between an employee or an AFTE and the revenues generated from AWWU or MLMP or any particular utility. Because we are very much like, we take our revenues in like property taxes. Someone pays property taxes, but doesn't have a child in school, they still pay property taxes to benefit the whole. So our revenues will get smaller, and I think the revenues for RAPA, the public advocate, which also is based on RCCs, get smaller, and the total is about $500,000. How we deal with that is something that we're working on right now. Right now, I think we said that it's approximately equivalent to three FTE positions that we would reduce to compensate for that loss of revenue. There are other alternatives available to us, and we'll be looking at those remedies in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one follow-on. One other point, and again, I apologize for not having heard debate on this. My only other point was that I tend to think it's the business of Anchorage's utility if they want to opt out, and if that should probably be their prerogative. I do have a little bit of a history problem with that, where in Fairbanks, when the municipal utilities were run by the municipality, it became such a mess that eventually the utilities were sold to the private sector. Maybe that's a good result, and I should just dog it off there. But there were some years of misery along the trail. And someone told me that if there's going to be an authority to deal with that, or maybe I'm not using the right term, but that was my only other question. So that is how that the attempt is being made to provide the type of oversight, rate protection, equity among payers, that sort of thing.
But Representative Kelly, there was some concern that the only check and balance was going to be the Anchorage Assembly, and that was not enough assurance for some of us. So the idea of an authority came into play that will kind of oversee all the rate increases, as well as the Anchorage Assembly.
Thank you, Ms. Chairman. And since Ms. Geyert will be in front of our subcommittee next year, I would appreciate it if you would remember, since I will forget, or if she would remember, going through the chair, that next year we'd like to hear how it played out.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Kelly. Any other questions, comments?
Ms. Chairman, would you like an amendment to make that technical change?
Yes, I would, please.
Can I just do it verbally? It's very simple.
That's fine.
On page 2, line 28, delete appointed and insert approved. And then again on page 3, line 5, the same amendment, deleting appointed and inserting approved pursuant to the conversation. And I move that amendment.
Any objections?
That would be an amendment number whatever.
I guess that's amendment 3.
Number 3.
Amendment number 3. Is there any objections? Seeing none, that amendment is incorporated. Okay, any other discussion on House Bill 108 as amended? Seeing none, Representative Foster.
Yes, sir, I'll go ahead and move to the HB 108 as amended out of the committee of the statute.
Okay, any objections? Seeing none, that's bill passed the committee. Thank you.
This is a committee bill. I'm not available for a co-sponsorship.
Sorry.
Did you want a co-sponsorship? Just an observation.
All right. Let's talk bugs now. House Bill 19. And I know we... if we can get Kirsten and Mr. Pulaski to come up... And Representative Holm, I know, had missed discussion on this one too, so we may need to back up a little bit. Okay. House Bill 19, let's see. We have an amendment to make. Does everybody have a copy of the amendment? This is it Amendment 3? Is that correct, Mike? Okay. All right. Why don't we... We have the wind bill in front of us, which is... okay. Why don't we start with... Well, I tell you what, let's, Mr. Ryan or Mr. Pulaski, why don't you kind of bring us up to date? Because we did have a member or two who was gone when we had this discussion. Kind of bring us up to where we're at now, and then we'll see if we want to go ahead and make amendment number three. Is that where we're at? Okay, very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record again, my name is Michael Pulaski, and I'm an aide for Representative Meyer. Amendment number three grows out of a conversation that started in the last hearing on House Bill 19. Part of the discussion was particularly rooted to the hornet's nest under the edge or the eave of a bed and breakfast. And what amendment number three is going towards is a discussion of where are the real public health concerns that give rise to the reason House Bill 19 is here before you. And for that, our office initiated a discussion with the Department of Environmental Conservation. And since they are the experts, I would ask that they be able to talk about the health concerns and the definition that's before you.
Okay. Go ahead. That's
right. For the record, my name is Kristen Ryan. I'm the Director of Environmental Health for DEC. Where we see the most concern is with pesticide exposure, is where you have a long-term exposure. So the areas we are thinking about are things like apartments where you're having spraying occur and you have children on the floor, or perhaps in a park where you're having a picnic and you're laying on the grass and they may have sprayed there yesterday. So those are the two areas in particular that DEC was thinking public notification made the most sense. You really, and the use of a certified applicator in multifamily dwellings where children are on the ground and in parks where you're being the opportunity for a long-term or significant exposure can occur. So,
and if I might just follow up on that, Mr. Chairman, the idea was to remove really references to the business community where exposure is a transient fact. Someone is going out shopping and experiencing it, but yet still include the areas that are parks and plazas and public sports fields where often the concern arises as well with animals or with people that just would like to know that something has been applied in an area that they visit or patronage so that they can have the freedom to decide whether or not to enter on the premises at that time.
Okay, very good. Let me just back up a little bit. I want to welcome Representative Cross and Representative Jewell to the House Finance Committee. And we do have the recent, IBM guys, white shirt. we do have the Resource Committee bill still in front of us, and there is a new fiscal note also with this, as well as the proposed amendment that you're talking to. Okay, so Mr. Pulaski, then you pretty much, sounds like you're exempting, actually, I think I meant to turn the gavel over to you, Vice Chair Stoll. Let me pass the gavel, Vice Chair Stoll.
Come to order. Representative Meyer, you have a question?
Yes, thank you. So you pretty much have changed the Amendment 3, and I'd like to move Amendment 3 so we can discuss it.
I'll object for discussion.
Thank you. With this amendment, you're pretty much excluding business from this bill. Is that correct to say?
Through the chair,
unless you're in a mall or plaza.
Through the chair, Representative Meyer, that is correct. And for the committee's clarification, a lot of the definitions, particularly 1, 2, and 3, that were included in the amendment were B, C, and D. Under the previous section with some modifications made to D. So we've really tried to tidy up the definition to get away from those incidental impacts where the broadness of the language would bring in areas that there really wasn't an intent to get to in the first place.
Mr. Pulaski, that's incidental impacts for the customers, but not necessarily the employees?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, that's correct.
The employees are assumed to know the risks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, the employees are assumed to know the risk, but also, as we understand from legislative legal, that drifts into workers' compensation issues.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Holm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to comment that about Amendment Number 3. Amendment Number 3 does precisely what I was hoping that Amendment Number 3 would do, and I do appreciate that. And so I have no objections. I did write each of you a letter But this solves a great amount of my concerns. Having said that, I'm not sure at the end of the day I'm going to support the bill, but at least at this point, I do appreciate the efforts on the part of your staff. So thank you, Representative Meyer.
Any other discussion on the amendment? Representative Kelly.
I'm not against this bill. I've got a lot of communication since it sounded like I might be against this bill, and that's fine. But I think we've got two camps. We've got people that are scared to death of chemicals, and they live their lives in total fear of it. And on the other side, we've got people that don't run into them much and probably don't care as much. And somewhere in between, we're supposed to make law. And right now, as I understand it, we regulate and control the restricted chemicals. And DEC does that now. And that what we're doing is moving into the store-bought type material here. And I'm just maybe a little bit like Representative Holm, concerned that you're not going to really be there every day, everywhere, anyway. You can't. It's already against the law to do something that's harmful to your neighbor. At least there are ways to get at that. I've never had anyone spray anything toward me as a neighbor, and I've had a lot of neighbors and over the years. So I haven't had the problem that some describe that seems to occur quite commonly. But is there some way, you know, we're trying to do two things here. We're trying to recover the cost, but at the same time, we've taken another bite at the apple, and that is we've gone from the restricted chemicals to the Safeway shelf. And are we doing an unwise thing by coupling these? I guess I would just ask the sponsor of the motion if the attempt to tie these together hasn't caused more trouble than a little bit, and if it wouldn't be better to try to get the revenue in, have a look at that, see how it's doing, keep the control over the restricted chemicals, and before we raise the cost of government significantly by going to every can on the store shelf that somebody might stick up a hornet's nest, should we look at that separately? I just, not like I say, I'm not against the bill, but I see a bill here that gives me some concerns.
Well, I'll answer briefly and then ask see if they can answer too. My intent here is twofold. One, there is a public health issue here concerning some of these chemicals that are being used and not knowing what's being used. That's number one. And number two is that when we did the research here and we found out that we're the only state that doesn't require these large chemical companies to at least pay for the registration fee, because it does cost DEC to monitor the chemicals that are being sold in this state. So, you know, they should at least pay that general fund money that's being used to monitor this program, just like every other state does. And that's why, well, we can talk about the fiscal note later, but you'll see that it saves about $100,000 in general fund money, because now the registration fee is going to be paying for their costs. So I guess the reason why I'm bringing this forward is for both reasons, both from a revenue standpoint and a public health standpoint.
Mr. Pulaski or Ms. Ryan, expand on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may, one, I would like to explain a little bit about what we do. I think there's a little misunderstanding. The department registers chemicals for sale in Alaska, and if they're on the shelf, that means they've gone through our registration process. All chemicals available for Alaskans count toward this registration process. So we're already doing that. We already are out inspecting locations. They're sold in stores. We do go into stores and make sure that the flea collars on the shelf are safe to be there and are ones still approved by us and by EPA. We still go out and inspect the use of chemicals by certified applicators. So all this bill is adding to, it's adding a few things that are significant, but what it's changing is it's requiring whenever these chemicals, any of these chemicals, what are on the shelf or what you need to, a restricted use permit to use. There are some that are more dangerous than others. That you notify the public before you use them in certain areas. And I think we've limited those certain areas to the areas that are most significant for public health. I think we've really scaled the bill back quite a bit with this amendment to really only focus on the areas where long-term or significant exposure can occur, where health is an issue. The certified applicator aspect of it, to me, is more significant almost than the public notification. As my dad tells me on the farm, you know, twice the dose works twice as fast. And that's just something that we all do. And I think it's really important that the people that are applying the chemicals at least know the basics of how to do it right and safely and are following the label. And that this bill accomplishes that as well. So I don't see this as taking too big a bite out of the apple. I think that we're already doing a lot of this stuff anyway. It just adds a few more layers to it. And by making the manufacturers who profit from the use of these chemicals pay for the regulation of them, I think that's appropriate.
Representative Holm, we're still on the amendment.
Yeah, we are on the amendment. I'll wait until the amendment's over. Thank you.
Okay.
I just want to comment on something else.
Okay. Thanks. I'm going to remove my objection to the amendment. Is there other objection maintained or any other questions? Hearing no objections, the amendment is adopted. Other questions? Representative Holm, you wanted to pursue a
question? I'm sorry I didn't bring this with me, but I should have. Mr. Chairman, I would like to ask Kristen if she could give me the definition for the word pesticide.
Just a moment. I'm going to give you two things. I'm going to give the definition of a broadcast chemical as well because it's different. And of course, it's buried.
Mr. Chairman, while she's looking through that, the reason I bring this up is it's far more onerous than you may think. A pesticide is anything that can alter the state of a living being, whether it be plant, fungus, animal, insect. And I wonder, with regards to this total bill, whether or not DEC is really understanding the largeness of this, the potential largeness, if you will, of this action.
Representative Holm, this bill only impacts chemicals we already register. These are chemicals, the Federal Insecticide and Rodenticide Act is the federal legislation, that's everyone calls it FIFRA, that dictates what pesticides or herbicides, pesticides is a very broad term that basically, you're right, covers anything that hinders the growth of something. Bleach is a pesticide.
That's correct.
Because of its potential to harm something in the environment, EPA does extensive research on the product before it is allowed for sale. It's similar to what FDA does for drugs, but actually I think much more extensive. When they're done with their research, they stick a label on the, well, they stick a requirement on the label explaining the safe use of that product, and if you don't use it according to the label, you are violating federal and state law. It is broad. The chemicals or the products that are registered in the state of Alaska vary, but they're as high as 5,500 and have gone as high as 5,700 products that we're talking about. We would exempt certain things like sanitizers and disinfectants from the fee, but they do have to be registered to be used in Alaska already. The broadcast chemical term, if I may, is also very broad, and I know it was asked last time we were here, and I want to make sure people know what it is because it is defined in statute. It means chemical substances which are released into the air, onto the land or water for the purpose of preventing, destroying, repelling, stimulating, or retarding plant or animal life, or chemical substances released for meteorological control, oil spill control, or fire control. But this bill is restricted to the chemicals we register through the registration process already.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can I get a follow-up, please?
Please.
And the reason I want to follow up here is because there's a number of things that she just mentioned that I think that need to have the light of sanity put on. One is the word stimulate. and if I believe it's in, it is in there that says if you stimulate growth, does that mean that fertilizer is included? And if it is included, my question is, how in the world could anybody possibly monitor all the public areas or even consider doing that? And my question, Mr. Chairman, is not so much about the process here as it is about the camel's nose under the tent. I think the camel's breeding under this tent. It is a huge oversight of programs that we federally mandate already. The Federal Drug Administration, Food and Drug Administration, the federal EPA regulatory process. If you remember my letter, Mr. Chairman, in my letter I wrote to you that there are hundreds of millions of dollars that are being spent by these chemical companies to take each and every one of these products before they sell them nationwide and put the proper labeling on them, to put the proper registration numbers on them. And I suggest that the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation does not have the personnel, nor does it have the desire necessarily to go through that process with the proper educated people that need to duplicate, if you will, the efforts of the federal process that we already pay for. And I question the need in the sense that if we have a state that wants to spend money trying to go out and look for problems, it's perfectly acceptable. But I question whether or not the public's served well to do that. This is just happens to be something that's bothered me in for a number of years, just because we don't have, I've had a number of regulatory agency folks come through my establishment, and in under questioning, they had no idea what the EPA numbers were all about, and they had no idea how they related to the products. They had no idea why those products were sold on my shelf, and they had no idea what they were used for. And between all of those things, it was very peculiar to me that the state would say, well, you can't have it on the shelf because it's a bad chemical, or you can't sell it to a consumer because he might abuse it, when I physically could not sell them because I'm federally regulated that I cannot sell these products without these EPA labeling. So I find this bill to be potentially onerous. I don't find it to be a bad bill at all, Mr. Chairman, and certainly Representative Meyer is to be commended for looking to try to protect people from having exposure to difficult situations. But in this case, I'm having some very difficult times with the process involved with this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I do appreciate the comments there from Representative Holm. But I think you're more frustrated or concerned about the program that's already in existence. And what this bill is actually going to do is now say the program that's already in existence is going to be paid by the chemical and pesticide companies instead of by our general funds. Now, if we want to get rid of the program, that's a different story, and we can do that through the budgetary process. But I think you guys have been doing this for many, many years, and it sounds like maybe you've been investigating Representative Holmes' business for too much or too long. But I understand your frustrations. Working for an oil company, I know the regulations and the
Chevron chemical, I might have.
Yeah.
There you go.
I would like to address the fiscal note now, if we could, and maybe
we'll get off of matters pestiferous and onto financial here.
What does that mean?
I just looked it up.
maybe I could ask Mr. Pulaski to explain the changes to the fiscal note that the Commission is chairing.
Mr. Pulaski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The fiscal note that is before you is a revised fiscal note, and we went back to the Department of Environmental Conservation and looked at the addition of three positions. We're uncomfortable in the long term with adding three positions, felt they could be dealt with in the normal budgetary process. Reduced to a degree some of the travel line, reduced to about $10,000 the contractual to set up the system, reduced supplies by about $1,000, and reduced the equipment.
I don't have
reduce the equipment, brought the realization of the general funds in a year, so we realize revenue a bit earlier, and in year one we look at a 96.4 thousand dollar general fund increase because the money that would have gone towards this program is now replaced by program receipts. And that gets, that improves by about $20,000 out into the future per year.
Representative Meyer.
I think you said it saves $96,000, about $100,000. That's savings, that's general fund money that it's saving us from spending by having program receipts.
Through the chair, Representative Meyer, that's correct. And that's in year one. Year two, you realize about an $18,000 subsequent advantage because the cost of setting up the billing system has already been absorbed in year one. That allows you to add the second position to take care of the regulation and enforcement of the program. Following that, the real advantage that this fiscal note gives is that the fees that we discussed can subsequently be reduced. And I think the calculation under this fiscal note is an $85 fee per chemical, which gets towards the concern that the chemical companies had raised in their letters to you, is that what is a reasonable fee? So as these numbers come down, or as in negotiations, less chemicals are dropped from the registration rolls in Alaska, that fee can continue to decrease significantly down to a very reasonable range.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
I have just a question on policy. I've gotten a lot of correspondence on this issue, and not a single person has mentioned the fees or the. I know Representative Meyer's motivation, but is the department's larger concern collecting the fees, or is it the public health? What's your bigger motivator here? So I know, as we're preparing the floor, and there's push and shove on fiscal notes and.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's a difficult question to answer. Obviously, our primary focus is to protect the public health, so I would have to say that's my main motivation. But I do also personally think that a company that is benefiting from the use of a product should be covering some of the costs of doing so. And knowing we're the only state that does not do that, I think it's legitimate for us to have fees support this program.
If it came down to compromising down, you'd be willing to make do with less for the greater public policy good of controlling pesticides?
Mr. Chairman, we made a compromise. Well, one, knowing this amendment was going through, the workload is decreasing as well.
Any other questions? Representative Holm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On this subject, I do have, and it's just being prepared for me, the current pesticide definitions that are used in state law. And one of the things I'd just like to point out just before we go any further is that one of the words that's used is biological agent. And biological agent can be considered an organic pesticide. Let me give you some examples. Ladybugs are biological agents. Thrips. Mite predators are biological agents. And there's a number of things that I think as a maybe I could just pass these around. There's a number of things that that when you look at this, you say to yourself, wow, is it, I need one back. Just say, how would we do this? Anything mitigating plant or animal life, what in the world does that mean? Mitigating plant or animal life and any substance intended for use as a plant regulator, defoliant or desiccant. Well, defoliants are things that will knock the leaves off a plant, and a desiccant, of course, is killed the tips of leaf. Rodenticides, herbicides, nematocides, and biocides. And nematocides can be like nematodes that actually kill other plants and animals. I think it's just a huge step, and so I'll leave it at that. You can look at it and make up your own minds. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Representative Kelly.
Just a quick one. You mentioned, Mr. Chairman, you mentioned that that you're already doing all these things, essentially. And yet we make statements like under C on page 2 that we're, the regulation of pesticides and broadcast chemicals registered under AS 46, et cetera. What, I understand what you're doing on the fees, although I think it's a dice game a bit because we're going to knock down the number registered because the manufacturer is going to shrink like away from the cost, but then we're somehow going to catch up over a few years, and I'm almost willing to just give up and say you must be right. But on the fact that we're already doing all these things, what is it then that we are changing in here? Forget the fees. What are we changing about what you're going to do tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock after the day that you hear this thing passed?
Representative Kelly, through the chair. Well, first, I'm going to be writing regulations furiously because once the general fund goes away, which will be July 1, I'm going to need fees to replace that to sustain the work that I'm doing.
Forget the fees.
What are you going to be doing? Right, but regulations are a significant aspect of work.
I don't want to, that part's administrative. Just so I'm clear, Mr. Chairman, on what I'm asking much less. Forget about the regulation or about writing the regs and how you carry it out. What is it that you learned from this bill that you need to do in DEC differently that's going to impact people like Representative Holmes?
So, Representative Kelly, you want some real practical, non-bureaucratic answer to how it's going to affect your friend from Fairbanks there and other businesses in your community?
Shouldn't take much more than a couple sentences.
Representative Kelly, I'll give you my answer, and then you can get the DEC's answer. Well, what this will do now is that it's going to require a notice that they've been spraying whatever chemical pesticide in these public areas, this park, this government office, whatever. There'll be some notice. So when you're walking in, you'll know if you're allergic to whatever that, you know, I don't want to go in there. So it's kind of a right to know bill. That's one thing that I know this is going to happen right away. But go ahead, Kirsten, you've got another answer.
Representative Meyer, you were exactly, that's about basically it. There'll be two new requirements. One, you'll have to use a certified applicator if you apply pesticides based on this amendment, which now means, as I understand, Representative Holmes' business won't be impacted at all. You'd have to use a certified applicator to apply pesticides in a park or in your apartment building. Secondly, those certified applicators would have to post a sign after they have sprayed so people are aware that spraying has occurred in that area.
Representative Kelly, follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Representative Foster, you have a motion?
Okay, I'll go ahead and move HB 199 out of committee as amended and adopt it in the authorization.
All right. So, any objections? So the bill is moved out of committee, a departed friend. We'll stand at ease for a second here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Finance is coming back to order. We're going to take up House Bill 61 next. After that, Randy, I promise we'll get to House Bill 88. Appreciate you staying with us. Shalon. Come on up here, please. Representative McGuire left.
Yeah, she actually had to step out. She's in Military and Veterans Affairs.
No
voting today.
Problem.
So.
You're doing a fine job. Okay, we have before us the F version. There was an amendment made but held, so it wasn't actually moved. And I don't know what the Representative Stoltz wants to do with that one, but you do have an amendment too, for
well,
sure.
Yes,
you want to move amendment two, or you want to go back to amendment one?
Let's move amendment number two. I'll move on.
Okay, and I'll object for purposes. That's amendment two, I think. Okay, so amendment two has been moved and objected. Go ahead.
By way of explanation, this is an amendment actually drafted by the sponsor of the bill and staff. I think after the testimony by the Department of Revenue and talking about his excitement about the expansiveness of gaming and equating it to the earth of pull tabs and create a lot of excitement, there was a desire to narrow the focus of this to the original intent of the sponsor, which was Calcutta golf events. And there in the intent of the bill, there's a lot of other worthy types of events talked about. That, and I sort of agree with the sponsor that each one of those ought to be discussed on an individual basis, whether it is, you know, other amendments or and what the impact would be to, in order to limit the scope of this and keep it narrow. And as an event is added, then or considered and discuss the impact. Is that a fair assessment, Ms. Szymanski?
Yes.
Okay, very good. And just so everybody knows, we do have Mr. Myers online, Deputy Director of Tax Division. For any questions, is that what you have?
I have a question.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Just a general question, and that's Calcutta events. Is there any prohibition of the participants engaging in the wagering? I know in pull tabs and other charitable gaming, there's a very strict prohibition against those selling or involved in working from also buying pull tabs. You know, just an analogy. Certainly in a game of skill, there's the ability to influence the betting and the outcome. Is there?
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, I believe our intention was to limit it to people that were 18 or older. I'm not sure if that ever made it into the bill. We do, Section 8 on page 3 does mention that the competitors must be 18 years or older. So we may want to put an addition in there to say that the people placing wagers age 18 years or older.
Mr. Chairman, that wasn't really the question. It's whether or not the participants should also be prohibited from wagering. And
oh, no.
Was there any discussion?
The chair, I believe that in many Calcutta pools, the participants who are competitors also have the opportunity to place wager, if I'm understanding that correctly.
And just as a regulatory concern, Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Sure, go ahead.
I'd sure want to know, because in other charitable gaming, there are very strict prohibitions about those actually involved in running the gaming from participating. And certainly, and it's a game of skill, and I don't know what type, there's certainly not a, we don't know what kind of regulations have set it on weight. Certainly, there's a possibility, if there's a big enough prize, you might want a tank, you know, and this is for charity, is the goal. But there's certainly some of it would go to the participants the bettors, the proceeds. So that's a policy question.
Okay, welcome, Representative.
Thank you.
House Finance, do you want to take a shot at that?
Thank you. Yeah, I wish I had a golf game for every hour I've spent on this bill. serious, but through the chair, Representative Stoltz, I think, you know, what I've arrived at in this area is that there's going to have to be, for as much as I detest regulations sometimes and get frustrated by the fact that in some cases it's a usurping of our power and our ability to craft policy. I think in this area it is going to require some really, really detailed regulation writing, because you bring up a good point, and clearly we wouldn't want to envision something like that where somebody would set out to, you know, purposely do poorly at golf and allow another team to win and have a cut at that, or whatever the scenarios are you could put together. You know, this bill, just to kind of step back, really the intent behind it is to make law-abiding citizens out of many of the people in Alaska who have been putting together these tournaments for charity for years. And they're done from the goodness of their heart and for fun and so on. And what's happened is that through the years there's been sort of a chilling effect on it, with the recognition that it isn't legal, that it isn't in statute. So that's where it all started out, and I do think that there will be room for regulation writing to get down to that real detailed part. But the overall intent is that the goal is to benefit charity. I don't want to see a situation set up where people are descending upon Alaska and setting up, I don't know, bookie booths or whatever. That is also a reason, too. I don't know if you've gotten to the amendment yet, Representative Stoltz, but that's part of the reason for a desire to even narrow it further. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, go ahead.
Actually, we're debating the amendment. That's it's on the floor. So.
Yeah, actually, we have amendment number 2 on the floor. And I have a question about this, and you would know the answer. Can we make a title change?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, so long as it accompanies the title resolution.
Okay, so we would need your resolution going.
Yeah, so you just...
This is a House bill.
House bill.
Okay, so
that's right.
So
yeah,
don't make
that's
title
right.
changes.
We can turn it in the operating budget if you wanted to.
I can see some things I want to put in it now.
Can we put it on the fast track?
That's right.
Okay, where are we at here? Let's go, Ripson and Foster.
Yeah, I would object to this amendment. I've been in golf courses at home, so I don't even know if they're in Western Alaska, or Southwestern Alaska. I mean, this is just gearing this thing just for Anchorage and Fairbanks for general. You know, I've got scholarship foundations too. You know? Why should just the urban areas benefit from this stuff?
Good point.
Through the chair, Representative Foster, you know how much I respect you and what you have to say. I kind of intended today to be a little bit of a work session, and I threw this amendment out there, and Representative Stoltz was gracious enough to offer it for me, because what I've encountered, again, you know, someone comes to you and says, this is just a little bill, and it'll just take a little bit of your time, and it sort of overshadows the rest of your life for a while. And so here I am with Calcutta Pools. And I originally, we had the language broader to encompass just what you said, kind of reflect the reality of Alaska, that these things are going on, that they take place in rural and urban and all different parts of Alaska. And largely that we know of for good reasons. And so we have tried very diligently to kind of get our arms around what we think those things are. But the problem that I have now is the Department of Revenue has come out in testimony in this committee and to me personally with statements about, you know, this being the largest expansion of gaming since pull tabs. And you understand the kind of political pressure that brings on. So out of pure frustration, I decided to just go back to the original purpose from the people that came to me. And it's actually a Native corporation in Alaska, Siri, that does these to benefit scholarships. And I decided that we could start there, and if there were people that could make the case for adding different things along the way, bring them on, build the constituency, and get the votes. But what I don't want to see happen is a situation where I'm continually battling the department and battling the other body potentially with this, you know, idea that I'm somehow the gaming queen. And so that's the reality. So I deeply respect your comments, and I will respect whatever this committee decides to do today.
Thank you, and thank you, Representative Foster, for bringing that up, because I don't think we want to visit this statute each time a new game of chance comes up, but politics. Representative Hopper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative McGuire. I'd like, as you get dialogue, I share Representative Foster's concerns in that, in some ways, you know, as this bill was moving, as it introduced, there were a lot of folks in various communities that saw, this is a great thing, because frankly, as we heard testimony, it will legitimize activities that have been conducted in this state, you know, ad infinitum. And they've not been a problem. This has not been a problem. I don't see organized crime operating these things. I don't see people losing their households because they've become gambling addicts. I think we might need some testimony that golf event Calcuttas are not addictive in relation to some of the testimony we've heard. But specifically, the one that I missed, I saw this and said, this is great. This would legitimize trap and skeet shooting Calcuttas. And again, I very strongly would like, if we're going to start restricting this, do we need to make a list of good Calcuttas now? Or is this something that it becomes, sort of say, too, if it's good for the goose, where's the gander in this one? Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that as I listened to the testimony of Department of Revenue that I really agreed with or drew the same implications that they did. Pull tabs, to likening this to pull tabs, I think there's a legitimate grounds here for us to disagree with the interpretation we heard from Department of Revenue on this. Pull tabs, I'm across the, every tavern in Alaska sells them, grocery stores, rookie parlors. I don't see Calcutta pools in anything even close to the same light. And, you know, for the DOR guy that is, you know, our compliance guy that's here, I've never participated in a Calcutta pool in my life, but I just don't see them being as such an issue. So I endorse the sentiment of Rep. Foster and certainly encourage the continued dialogue.
Well, and through the chair, Representative Hawker, you know, and ultimately Representative Stoltz may even choose to withdraw the amendment and we go forward. But what I'd like to be able to do is at least get some testimony on the record to that effect, because, you know, the day after the hearing, I just sort of could see these headlines, and I was in another meeting, and so Shalon came back and told me, and, you know, this is her first year as a staffer, so that was quite an interesting experience for her, to say the least. So you make a really good point, because, I mean, the rule is sort of when you speak on a subject, you're speaking, and to leave things out in some way implies that you're speaking for them not being included. And that's a concern that I have. So, you know, I lean more toward that. I just want to have kind of some stuff built up in the record. I personally believe that there is an incredible amount of latitude that the Department of Revenue could have to set up some regulations to really get their fingers around the true intent of this, which is charitable goals. I mean, obviously, we don't want to see commercial operators set up bookies running around town and those types of things. But like I say, I would appreciate any further testimony on that subject.
Okay.
And I think if I may just one emphasis, I think you touched it at the end there. We're in the context of the law as a whole, we're not allowing anyone that wants to execute a Calcutta. You know, they still have to be those organizations that are specifically allowed within statute currently and are regulated and are required to do reporting and all the other, controls over this are not being in any way circumvented by the by your original proposed bill.
Well, through the chair, Representative Hawker, you bring up a good point. And this has kind of been the difficulty, because in the sense that we have already required in our statutes for any type of gaming for there to be a charitable purpose, we stay with that spirit. And there's a percentage requirement of that. So that's there. In terms of putting your arms around who would be the kinds of people that would put together a Calcutta, again, you're faced with this choice of putting together a list of who all of these folks would be. At one point, some of the folks doing it thought, well, let's list kind of the specific folks that could do that. Well, I don't think that that's fair personally, just because somebody didn't have that thought, 5 years ago, or maybe they thought they didn't want to break the law, whatever the reasons were, I don't think we should exclude them. So no, it isn't that they're defined to a certain category. The only real way to get at it is to kind of say that, you know, it's got to be for these charitable reasons. And again, I think through regulation, you could say, you know, that it can't be a commercial enterprise. I mean, there might be some other ways of getting at it through regulation. But, I mean, it has to be, you know, you can see on page 2, line 9, the department may issue, so the discretion's there, a permit to a municipality or qualified organization. And then it kind of goes through there and it defines the organization. But, I mean, those are really the only boundaries that you have. And the Department of Revenue, frankly, I mean, they have come up with some wild scenarios that...
But you've answered my question. I think we do maintain adequate controls in this situation.
Thank you, Representative Hawker. Representative Croft.
Because it would have to be a municipality or a qualified organization. And by qualified organization, it's getting very early, that's nonprofits, right?
Yep.
I haven't put it up in the statute.
Yep.
Back to the definition of Section 9, sort of what we're playing with the amendment. So right now, it's a sporting event in the state. So you can't have an NCAA pool under this.
Right.
You can have a Great Alaska Shootout pool.
Yes.
No, because that would be post-secondary.
Oh. Through the chair, that was another amendment that we made. That would be post-secondary. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So no. But through the chair, that's Section A. But through the chair, in answer to your first question, yeah, it has to be in the state. We even toyed around with the idea of saying that the person that organized it had to be a participant. You know, we looked at that idea too and then thought, you know, not everybody's great at Iditarod mushing, for example, and nor would we want to see some people doing that that might want to organize it, including myself. So, but yeah, it does have to be within the state, and my apologies, on page 1 is where we exclude, right, Section 1?
No, it's,
where is it?
Section 8.
So it can't be conducted for elementary, secondary, or post-secondary school sporting events.
Or for
go ahead, Representative Croft.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought Chief Wagner's comments were good yesterday. We want to each time be clear about what it is we're authorizing and make sure that so there's a cost benefit each time. So I'm trying, the original one that was brought to you that you want to allow is which charity that does?
It, through the chair, it's Siri, Native Corporation's golf classic that they do for a scholarship.
And is the Farron Camp, stop the Farron Camp one because of this golf?
I'll let Representative Stoltz answer that.
Okay. Representative Stoltz, you want to take a shot at it or did you want to plead the fifth?
I don't know about any gaming going on around here.
I'm not trying to.
I'm following the counsel of S. Croft Esquire with this enforcement officer online.
Right.
All right. Yeah, let's try a different question. Representative Croft.
Okay, so those are the kind of things you want to allow generally. Are you worried about the Iditarod aspect? If there'd be charities out there doing the Iditarod pool?
Well, through the chair, Representative Croft, I mean, it does specifically mention page 2, line 14, dog mushers contest. So, you know, I'm not in the sense that, again, I think so long as the goals were charitable the activities were in state. The sideboards were put up for nonprofits only. I think you get there, but the reason we excluded in Section 8 the elementary, secondary, and post-secondary school events was frankly from Chip Wagner. He did bring that point up, and we thought, yeah, I mean, you really don't sort of want those things being conducted around, you know, high schools battling each other and, you know, and even probably the shootout and things like that. But, it would include the Iditarod if this amendment were not adopted.
And then one to the revenue guy who we're all worried about. why is this... Can I...
Yeah. Mr. Meyer, is she still online?
Maybe. Oh, good.
Mr. Myers, again, are you online?
Mr. Chairman, I am.
Okay, Representative Croft has a question for you.
Why is this a game of chance? It seems like it's a game of skill. And is there some term of art there that I'm missing? But it's, you know, this is people competing, and why is it termed a game of chance?
Through the chair, the game of chance is a term of art that's used to describe just about every type of event that's in there, all the way from the ice classics. So that defines it to mean that type of event. The term game of skill is, or contest of skill, is actually defined in statute. So you go from a word of art to a definition of what a contest of skill is.
Representative Stoltz.
Thank you, Representative McGuire. I appreciate your intent on this. I had a simple rat race bill last year. It had a 55-year history, and I beat my head against a concrete wall and ended up putting more effort, and it overshadowed my life too. And it's, you know, I picked up a moniker, so.
What was that
moniker? Yeah. Talking about scatology, you name it, there are some indignities you're going to have to suffer. But I'm going back when I was even younger and more idealistic than Shalon. I was an aide here in 1982, and I worked on a poll tab bill, and I didn't even know what one looked like at the time, and it was a fairly small enterprise in the state. And I think Representative Whiterock was a fellow aide back then, and I don't think anybody envisioned that was going to be a, you know, a $300 million industry. And you know, and some of that passed over a governor's veto, and certainly not uncontroversial. And some folks would like to turn the clock back, and that's. I don't have any. I'm not married to any just golf or, but and talking to you and your staff, I just I really want to keep a handle on the activities when we go forward. I mean, some folks want to go full bore. Some folks would. We had a casino bill pass through the House floor last year. It's certainly not related to this, but I mean, there certainly are other scopes of gaming that people are very comfortable with. But I think as a public policy point on this, I don't really know what Calcutta Pools. I don't think any of us really even have a real clue, even if we think we might, what this might engender. Is the imaginations of our betting public are run pretty wild, and that's it's a part of our culture. And it's going to be good for charities. We could really see a proliferation, and that's it's not any offense to others. As you said, this is really just a policy start here to start the discussion. And as you and I talked about, just trying to go back to the first point. I really think there's a lot of value. It's a real imperfect process, but trying to identify activities that have constituencies that and adding on, and you go through. It's not a totally logical process, but it's more logical than opening it wide open and then trying to figure out what you just unleashed. Because once there's a bunch of charities out there and beneficiaries, it's pretty tough to rein it back in, as we've seen from other activities. Just as a substantive question after that long diatribe there, there's an Attorney General's opinion that's been referred to. Does anybody have a copy of that so we can really get a handle on some of the... It's been referred to in testimony.
By the department?
I've heard it there's been a, that these there was an attorney general's opinion that disallowed these activities. And does anybody have a copy of that?
Through the chair, no, Representative Stoltz, but I will absolutely put my hands on it.
Thank you, Chairman Meyer, for that latitude that I grabbed.
All right. Thank you, Representative Stoltz. Representative Hoxton.
Thank you, and for the indulgence, I'd like to follow on to these comments. Should we pass a fairly open Calcutta pool bill into law? Should thereafter abuses be identified? I would just offer that, guess what? As quickly as we pass one law, we can pass another.
Oh, no.
every activity has its constituency, but if the larger will of the public is that to overrule that constituency, it certainly can be done. So I guess, again, I'd bring the err on the side of supporting the nonprofit organizations in the state and give them the widest possible latitude. I have a much more libertarian philosophy about trust the people, not inherently trust the people, not inherently distrust the people.
Through the chair, Representative Hucker, one other thing too in the bill is that the wager, the bid on the team has to occur at an auction. And that's another thing to think about as well that gives me a little bit more comfort. It's not the kind of thing that you can go and, I don't know, put a bid down at some kind of, let's say a bingo parlor or a pull tab place that you could sort of walk in and there'd be a desk and you could register your Calcutta or these types of things. That was one sideboard we tried to put on it, that it'd have to be this sort of auction thing. We've all been there. We know what it is. It's kind of hard to put it in words, but where you're bidding on a team. So that's one other thing, too, I think, on the record.
Okay. If we can here, I've allowed quite a bit of latitude, but let's just try to stick to the amendment as much as possible. Bill. Okay. Then I think if there's anyone else who wanted to speak on the amendment itself, amendment one was withdrawn, so we had just this one amendment before us. Let's see, who objected? I guess I objected. I'll maintain my objection. Representative Stoltz? Last say since you were here.
Mr. Chair, can I get some guidance from the bill sponsor?
Representative McGuire, Representative Stoltz has moved your amendment for you. You're about to vote on any party comments.
I know this is, Mr. Chairman, I know this is awkward, I really want the discretion, of this committee to play out. Because what I don't want to have happen is get on the floor and people feeling like they really didn't have the opportunity to narrow it down and that it be offered there and ranting and raving and so on. So if I haven't heard anybody so far speak strongly in favor of the amendment, I'm fine with it either way. I really feel like there's an opportunity for regulations to bring some sideboards up. It's got to be in the state. It's got to be through an auction. It's got to be on contests of skill, and it's got to be a nonprofit organization doing it. So
with those sideboards, I think you have adequate controls. But if you want to maintain the amendment, we'll vote it up again.
Mr. Kelly,
just a question on the title change. That's the first part of the amendment the amendment we're talking about, right? The first part of it. Okay. I kind of favor the title change. It's a little less raw, and I assume that's why it was changed. It's got the charitable part in there. So I kind of favor that. But then I don't favor the part because of my partner here on the left, of limiting it. If we get in trouble, we can always come back and slam it. But I don't think we ought to limit it. So if he wants to do something out there that's seal races or something, let him go at it.
It's fun.
They do some crazy stuff out there.
I've been there on a Friday night.
Mr. Chairman, along those lines, then, I guess I would just respectfully ask...
I'll withdraw the amendment.
Representative Stoltz to withdraw. But then, what ought to happen or could happen if somebody... wanted, maybe even Representative Kelly, would be a conceptual amendment that would tighten the title to be more reflective of the charitable goals within it. So it could say authorizing Calcutta Pools as a charitable gaming game of chance. That sounds sort of odd, but it could be conceptual, and we could allow the bill drafters to really tighten up that title so we don't end up with some baggage anywhere along the way.
Do you want to make that amendment?
Sure.
Okay, wait.
Sure.
Amendment 2, I withdraw my objection.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would move the conceptual amendment essentially saying authorizing golf event Calcutta Pools as a charitable and a gaming game of chance. Awkward, but maybe it's a term of art.
I'll object. We need to have some discussion. Go ahead, Mr. Hopper.
I think you didn't mean to include the word golf event.
No, I didn't. If you were excited.
Say that again.
So, I better put my glasses on. That would have Mr. Chairman, I'll start over. A conceptual amendment essentially authorizing golf event authorizing Calcutta Pools as a charitable gaming game of chance.
Jeff, any discussion on this?
That's all true.
Okay, I think that may get us there. That's conceptual amendment number one. Basically, all you've done is take out the golf.
Yeah, he's changed the title somewhat. It's fine. But it did a little more than that. It did more broad-based effects on the time. From licensing for...
any kind of Calcutta.
Right. You're right. I'm looking at the reference bills. Yes. Thank you. Representative Crawford. Okay. There's no objection. That's conceptual amendment. Is this conceptual amendment number 3 or is this number 1?
Number 3.
Yeah, three. 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 All right. This is conceptual amendment number 3. It has been approved. So we have the bill before us again with this as amended. Any other discussion? Seeing that? Oh, Representative Schnall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would have just a comment. I would like to thank the sponsor for bringing this issue before us. So I am an advocate golfer.
In a good way.
I've been where these have taken place before.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I realize that most of them are for a good cause. And I think that that's the issue that we're really looking at here, is that we do have organizations like you've stated, and the will is to try to help kids with education or whatever the charity may be. And these people are law-abiding people who are out to, one, have a good time, two, they want to support the nonprofits in their area or in other areas of the state, and this was an option of where they could actually do that and have a little bit of fun at the same time. And, you know, by taking that away, you know, we're really just removing money from nonprofits, and I don't think any of us want to do it. So with that, I'd like to thank the sponsor for bringing this to us. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Representative Stoltz.
And Mr. Chairman, and I just hope if I think of anything here that clarifies this before we get to the floor, you won't be hostile to this is a floor amendment, if something that clarifies this, if we really want to have a product that serves the goals. I'm all for the charitable events, and maybe that legal opinion might give us some guidance. And no, it just it's. I really want to help out these charitable events. It's not just the Siri Foundation, but you go down the list. There's a lot of
a lot of good youth sports events, and it's golf events, and then the accompanying Calcutta's, they've almost gotten to the point of oversaturation.
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, I wouldn't be hostile at all to any new info that comes up that would help tighten it, and I just want to see if you'd make a motion to ask that all members here names be shown as co-sponsors.
I tried that my
best. Oh, draft.
I forgot about my colleague from the MATSU. I told him I'd bring up amendment number one and whatever the will of the committee is. It's on the crane amendment, the Sandhill Crane benefiting a Persuasive in the Valley charity, very specific. Certainly fits within, be a title change. I'd move that amendment number one. I think it should have still in our packets. I think we've already discussed it. So.
Let me ask, Madam Chair, so we'll call it amendment one that was withdrawn, and now Representative Stoltz is moving amendment one again. Any objections?
Object.
Go ahead, Representative Stoltz.
Well, it's again. This is the second amendment today. I haven't had a lot of ownership on. It's Representative Newman, my colleague from District 15, asked that I advance this amendment as a member of the committee. It's kind of a deviation of an animal classic, which caused a change of the title of the bill. It's adding crane classics. And not being a mechanical crane, but a sandhill crane, as specified in the bill and as an amendment. It benefits a public radio station in the Upper Susitna Valley, Talkeetna, I believe. And I think he addressed the merits in his advocacy of it, testifying to the committee yesterday and on it.
Any more discussion, Representative
Schmidt? Mr. Chairman, I would ask maybe Larry Myers could answer this question. Would animal classics not cover that, or do we need to specifically, as the amendment states, put that in there specifically for that? Or would that be an issue where the department could make that decision on whether it was an animal classic or whether it was a crane classic? I know Kenai had the goose classic. I think there's others that have all different types of classic. And would that be more of a department decision, or should we put each of those in there specifically? And I guess that's what I'd like to get answered.
Mr. Chair, this is Larry Myers again. By history, each classic has been added by specific name. So you would have to go in there and add it to that format.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
Yeah, on that point, animal classic is defined in AS 05-15-692. Animal classic means a game of chance in which prizes are awarded for the correct guess of which numbered or colored hole on a wheel a rat, hamster, gerbil, or rodent enters as the wheel is slowly rotated, or B, concerning an activity involving chicken manure and a numbered or lettered grid. And those are the only definitions of animal classic, and did not include the sandhill cranes returning to Kentucky.
This is really happening.
This is really happening. Thank you,
Mr. Co-Chair. I'm glad you have the book, Representative Cross. Well, then I'll remove my question. But I guess if we're going to give, and I guess my question is that if we're going to look at this and we're going to say, okay,
just a thought.
Just Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, what if on page 2, line 13, you struck the word goose classics and said bird classics? As a way to sort of, I mean, if you look at the other categories, they're a bit broader. You have a fish classic that could include predatory fish, even for that matter. It could include salmon, it could include halibut, it can include whatever. Maybe the idea there would be to broaden that category to bird classics.
Mr. Chairman, just in response to that?
Sure, go ahead.
I want to be very careful about bird classics. I mean, if we're real loose with this and just call it, I mean, we could end up inadvertently addressing cockfighting.
Oh.
I mean, that's... Yeah. Okay. Or other barbarous type activities that I have no intention of going towards.
My goodness,
okay, we spent a lot of time on the spin that yesterday. I spent a whole lot more time. I'm going to ask Ms. Cunningham come to the table, please. I know you've looked at this amendment for Mr. Shrimpson and Newman.
Join us. Thank you. For the record, Suzanne Cunningham, staff to Representative Meyer. Under AS 0515-180, Limitations on Authorized Activity, it says that with the exception of raffles, lotteries, pull tabs, numerous other things, an activity may not be licensed under this chapter unless it existed in the state and in substantially the same form before January 1st, 1959. And a bill that passed passed the 23rd legislature by Representative Stoltz, they added another sentence to it that put another timeline on there, which was November 1st, 2002. I talked with our legal services about incorporating all of these crane classics, goose classics, everything else under animal classics, and because of those time parameters, you cannot do it. So that is the reason why you can't incorporate everything under animal, that they have to be listed separately. And under...
That's your fault.
And also under 0515-690 definitions, there is Goose Classic is listed in here, the Kenai River Goose Classic.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Cunningham.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, on maybe this was answered yesterday, but page 2, section 4C.
Why does the Calcutta Pool have to be accepted from this operator?
Representative Kelly, we need to stick to the amendment.
I'll get to it on the amendment. Withdraw my...
All right, well, let's save it for later. Representative Holmes.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. With regards to Representative Stoltz's comments, it occurs to me that migratory bird classics might be a better way of looking at this, so that if it's a robin classic or if it's a snow goose classic or a sandhill crane or a whooping crane or whatever it is, it might encompass more groups without having to specifically go back into statute every time we want to change another one of these outfits. I mean, we spent an inordinate amount of time on little animals running in holes last year, if I recall. So just a comment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I appreciate that. I'm just afraid your bill is going to generate into things that you don't want it to here. So
I'll call a question.
Yeah, let's call a question.
Your question is on the Crane Classic?
Yes.
Just that amendment? And it's that on the amendment, then it's good because it has the protection that it'll still be legal to have a whooping crane classic, you know, it'll still be illegal to bet on when the first duck comes back. But yeah, we'll do sandhill for now. I don't have any objection to the amendment. I don't know whether there is one.
I'm going to maintain my objection.
Do you want to speak to it? Well, you don't want Sandra Crane classics.
Yeah.
I called the question.
I'm tired of hearing about this. And I frankly don't think, I'm afraid we're turning Representative McGuire's bill into other things than she wanted or had anticipated. And I think this could be the beginning of many other things. I think what Representative Newman's trying to do here is something to look at, but I think it's much broader than what we're trying to do here. But we do have a question called here.
Okay.
So let's go ahead and vote.
Representative Cobb?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
Representative Hawker?
No.
Representative Holm?
No.
Representative Kelly?
Yes.
Representative Moses?
Yes.
Representative Stoltz?
Yes.
Representative Meyer?
No.
5-3.
We'll pass it.
It's passed.
Yeah, it passes. Okay. Okay, amendment passes. Amendment, that was amendment one, correct? So, amendment one. Okay. Now, what we have to do is revisit amendment three. Madam Clerk, currently, Joanne, what's
the title?
Well,
I think amendment two is going to change amendment three.
Okay.
Amendment one.
All right, this feels like judiciary, doesn't it?
But it's so nice not to be.
Okay, we're going to come back to order with the change of or the passage of Amendment 1. It does change the title somewhat. So I'm going to give, with permission of the committee, the leeway here for the drafter or the legal services to change the title to reflect the amendments that we passed. Is that?
And there was an intention, I think, to make it as tight as possible. You don't want to see it coming back as a casino.
Does the committee want to see the bill back with the new title? Or
no.
Please. Very good. Then a motion, Representative Foster.
Okay. I did want to say, though, when we're done here, I was going to ask the sponsors to carry a few small bills tonight. What about the HB61 other committee has an answer with the federal changes or what are the implications?
Any objections? None. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you so much, you guys.
This was the easy part.
It's been fun.
Yeah.
It has.
I bet you it passes the Senate.
And don't bring
all right, it. All right. Randy, I promised we'd get to you, so let's see what you got. House Bill number 88.
I may learn a lesson this year.
Okay, well, Randy, you got to promise me we're not going to talk about birds.
No birds, Mr. Chairman.
No birds.
All right. Let's have order. We got the next bill in front of us. Let's see what notes they're saying. Okay, we need to adopt the blank committee substitute version 24GH1096/Y.
Is there a motion to do so?
So moved.
Yes.
The Yankee.
Yeah,
Yankee. Okay, I'm going to move to adopt CS88-096/Yankee.
Okay. Any objections? Seeing none, we have that CS before us. Randy Rural.
Sure. That's right.
Department of Law is going to be here to testify. And you've got Tony Newman, is he online?
Or
right
present.
There? Okay, very good. Okay, Randy, explain what this bill is about, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you to the committee for hearing the bill. For the record, my name is Randy Ruraro. I'm an assistant attorney general here in Juneau. I'm filling in for Ms. Carpinetti from the criminal division. I'm not a criminal division attorney, so I'll do the best to answer questions, but please attribute my answers solely to me. The CS version Y does several things. The first thing it does is provides for an aggravator in cases where assaults have occurred on school grounds, school buses, or at a school-sponsored event. That's Section 3 of the bill. Section 4 of the bill is a new section that's been added here in this CS, and it closes a loophole in response to a judicial decision that found a defendant could repeatedly claim credit on his sentence for the mitigating factor of assisting authorities. And the at least one court has found that they could do that repeatedly in subsequent cases and not limit the mitigator only to the case, you know, where the fellow was being sentenced. So this addresses that issue. That's Section 4 of the bill. Section 5 of the bill provides for an automatic waiver of 16 and 17-year-olds who are charged or convicted of committing certain Class A and B felony misconduct with weapons offenses, i.e. guns at a drug deal or a drive-by shooting. Sections 5 and 3 were worked over pretty well in the Judiciary Committee, and they did make changes to fit what their wishes were. That's a summary of the bill. I can try to answer any questions, or Mr. Newman's here for questions regarding the juvenile provision.
Okay, very good. Any questions for the sponsor, Representative Croft?
Okay, I think I understand Section 3. That's the aggravators. I'll maybe get back to 4. 5, so what I expected to see that Section 5 tie back to the schools, or because it's called the, what is the name of this now? School Violence Prevention Act. So what does 5 do again?
Through the chair, Representative Croft, Section 1 of the short title that you're referring back to was part of the original bill, and it does not really relate to the mitigator section that were been added here at this committee level. So that's where the inconsistency, I think, comes in. It's
okay, and then Section 5, which is the... this is when we are going to automatically waive juveniles into adult court, right? What categories of crime we're going to do that for?
Through the chair, Representative Croft, that's correct.
And before it was unclassified, it was arson, and this 3, which we have 5 X. We're adding a 4 that is, in effect, weapons infractions, but I'm having a hard time getting in my head from just these numbers what types of weapons infractions would automatically waive you to adult court.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Croft, I'll take a stab at it, and then maybe if Mr. Newman can help. But it's the weapons offenses that would be automatically waived would be under AS 1161-190, which is misconduct involving weapons in the first degree, a Class A felony. And under sub A1, that's using or tries to use a gun at a drug deal. And then A2 is shoots a gun from a moving vehicle, i.e. a drive-by shooting, under circumstances that manifested a risk of physical injury to a person. And that's a change that was made at the Judiciary Committee level, the risk of physical injury to a person. The other class is under 1161-195, misconduct involving a weapon in the second degree, Class B felony, and it's subsections A1, which is possessing a gun during a drug deal, and or A2, which is possessing a gun on school grounds or near daycare after having been convicted of a felony or adjudicated a delinquent minor. So those are the, I guess, 4 new categories that would be added to the auto waiver provision.
Follow-up question, Clark?
I'll read a little more. Just I've had a fair amount of constituents who carry, for defensive purposes, who then pick up their children and are worried about whether they're violating the law when they just have the gun in their car or on their person and they get school grounds. Nobody wants this kind of conduct, but you've got to be very careful in how you write it, or you can catch people in the net that you really don't want to. So I'll just read a little bit of the statute.
Sure, go ahead. Representative Croft. I think Representative Kelly, Holm, did you have a... Okay. Let's see. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll take you a different direction then. The fiscal notes are all zero, is that correct? You don't anticipate any additional costs?
Through the chair, Representative Meyer, that's correct.
Okay. I think Representative Stoltz had a question, but we'll give him a minute. Representative Croft, do you have any other questions?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Representative Stoltz, did you have a question?
Probably.
If you're not prepared.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, regarding Section 2, Mr. Rero. That's a recitation of some statistics from a Department of Health and Social Service survey listed in the statutes. How important is that to the bill in your...
It's not critical. Through the chair, Representative Stoltz, it's not critical. And in fact, on the Senate version of the bill, it was amended out in the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Okay, follow up on that. So this same bill has been introduced on the Senate side as well?
Through the Chairman Meyer, that's correct.
All right.
Can I ask?
Did you have any...
As a follow-up on that, when you get to the point of taking up amendments, I'd like to offer an amendment to delete that section and hear the arguments. So.
Which section?
Section 2. Oh. And I'm not spurred by any actions in any other bodies. And it's an independent action. I didn't even know there was another Senate bill.
Anything?
No, he wasn't agreeing to.
So sensitive. Okay. On Section 5, it will automatically waive, and this is not discretionary, right? If they fit within this, a minor has to be waived to adult court. The delinquency rules don't apply and you go to adult court.
Through the chair, but for the record, my name is Tony Newman. I'm program officer with the Division of Juvenile Justice, and through the chair, Representative Crawford, that's correct.
Yeah. Croft. But, okay, so 4 has the A, which was described, and then B is offenses in the second degree under AS 1161-195. 195 is misconduct involving weapons in the second degree. It has... A 1, 2, and 3. A 3 is discharges a firearm at or in the direction of a building with reckless disregard for the risk of physical injury to a person or a dwelling. Any, you know, and that section, I know it's there, but it's been problematic before. If I take my son, eventually he's only 4 now, and we shoot target practice on the land, may even shoot at a building we know to be empty, but it is a dwelling, can be a dwelling, with it as the backup. And it doesn't have to be directly at it. It's in the direction of, towards the house. That's, it seems to me, an offense under 1161-195. And it prosecuted, you know, that child goes straight to adult court. Why all of the provisions? I guess I understand the A part with the first degree and the, those are fairly tight. But this 1161-195 is the lower degree of weapons offenses. What was the rationale for it to be in this automatic? I mean, it's in with things like, you know, unclassifieds, murder and everything. I'm not sure why we're equating murder to these lower level misconduct with the weapons.
Through the chair, Representative Croft, I'll do the best I can to answer that question. I, on the 195, Section 195 offenses, the first one involves the commission of possessing a gun during the commission of a drug, you know, a drug offense.
So, right.
I guess the thought there was that's a serious enough crime to be subject to an automatic waiver. Two was possessing the possessing a weapon near a school or a secondary school or I think a daycare. And I'm reading kind of quickly.
That's okay.
I've kind of been tracking Annie. That's number two. And again, the thought was that guns in schools, I guess, don't mix well. Let's do what we can to deter people from bringing weapons to school. Three was, I believe, the intent or the description fits mainly with the drive-by shootings type offenses. And it does have under 3A, sub capital A, it does have a requirement that there have been a reckless disregard for a risk of physical injury. And I think although the scenario you describe technically fits within the statutory language, I think a prosecutor could exercise their discretion to charge some different offense or maybe not charge at all. And I guess certainly, a judge would have discretion in fashioning a sentence if there was a, you know, charges brought in, a conviction. But I think it's mainly aimed at drive-by shooting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? I believe you had an amendment. Representative Stoltz?
Let me just offer it verbally. It's very simple.
Sure.
To delete section 2. Make sure I get the right section here.
Okay.
Which is the finding intent section. Not a substantive section, and probably better an accompanying position paper. And
okay.
Might save us some money in that statute book a few years down the road.
Okay, that's the motion. Any objection? See no objection. That's incorporated.
I had a question, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Waller.
Fiscal note. With all the additional work that's going to be put on the public defender's office, shouldn't there be in a fiscal note? And if we're going to put people in jail because of this, shouldn't there be additional fiscal impact for that?
Go ahead. I know you've already answered the fiscal notes, but go ahead, Randy.
Through the chair, Representative Wyrock, I think the lack of a fiscal note might be due to the low number of anticipated cases that would be eligible for the auto waiver provision. And I think Mr. Newman can talk to the estimates.
Through the chair, in the past 2 years, we've had 16 youths who would have fallen under the auto waiver statute if it were to be adopted. That is, we had 16 or 17-year-olds who were charged with a misconduct involving a weapons in the first or second degree that would now have fallen under this if it had been adopted.
And so we're going to end up housing those juveniles. But there's no fiscal note?
Right now, 10 of those 16 youths, 10 of them were adjudicated, and of those adjudicated, 5 were given institutional orders to remain in secure treatment. 3 were placed on formal probation. One was ordered to supervision with custody in a non-secure setting. 1 was given a restitution order only. So it's first of all, it's such a small number of kids to begin with. Second of all, less than half of them ended up being institutionalized.
So that's zero fiscal impact?
In terms of increased workloads for probation officers and facility staff, yes.
In terms of anything else, facilities, maintenance? And so it's completely a zero fiscal impact. There's no fiscal impact whatsoever from those additional folks in the system.
I think you're saying that the impact would be minimal, so you just zero. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that's correct.
The only other question I had was that there was a work done a while back on bullying in school, and the Attorney General's office, or in conjunction with the Association of Attorney Generals, had indicated that bullying was a significant factor in that led to a lot of times violence, and it, or at least leads to absenteeism, vandalism, suicide, etc. And the legislature had previously addressed bullying. And I wonder if this is an appropriate bill to put something like that to address bullying and harassment and intimidation in school, which is, seems directly linked to this. And sort of the department had a position on that.
Through the chair, Representative Wyrock, the department's
bullying.
Both bullying.
Not bullying.
We're off. Calcutta's.
Bullying. Go ahead, Richard.
Through the chair, Representative Wyrock, I think the department would agree that bullying is an important issue at schools, but don't feel that this bill is the appropriate vehicle to address that. There are, I did do a little bit of digging, and there are state statutes and federal provisions in the No Child Left Behind Act that require individual schools to have plans to address conduct of students in the schools. And so it appears to me that right now individual schools and school districts are supposed to be implementing provisions to prevent bullying, violence, drug use on at schools. I'm not an expert on the subject, but I you know, can tell you that much.
Anything else? Okay. Any other questions?
Representative Crawford.
You're going to move this today?
Unless there's a reason not to.
Okay. Then I'd move.
Need some time to think about it. We can hold it.
No, I don't want to hold it up. In many respects, a good bill. I'd like to move an amendment, though, if I can. It'll be number two.
Yep, amendment number two.
And it just deletes on page 3, line 30.
Page 3, line 30.
Which are the second degree weapons offenses.
Okay, I'll check just to hear what it's about. Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, notice the provision that we're mentioning here. These are the serious crimes where you're automatically waived out of juvenile into adult cohort. We've defined crimes. It's arson in the first degree, not arson in the second degree. It's those highest levels up. And I'm comfortable with 4A that takes these very, very bad weapons offenses. The problem I have is with the second tier of weapons offenses. 195 is misconduct involving weapons in the second degree, and it's relatively easy. But so in the first degree, it's using a gun in the commission of a felony, or using it in that dangerous situation described. Under 195, simply possessing it on a school grounds. And I said it's not good to have guns on school grounds, but there are various ways you might innocently or semi-innocently do that. Three, discharges a firearm at or in the direction of a dweller. I want people to be careful too, but it's relatively easy to violate that, particularly the in the direction of. And you shouldn't do it, probably should be in trouble for doing it. Should you be automatically waived out of juvenile court into adult court for that? I'm just not willing to say that in every situation that automatically should mean that.
Okay. Representative Stoltz.
And if I might, Mr. Chairman, ask a question to Representative Croft through you. Remember in my days in high school at Chugach High School, we often went on duck hunting trips in the weekend. We'd have our shotguns in the vehicle, in the trunk, or in the back, and you're talking as good as you've imagined it. Is that, you have a better understanding of the criminal statutes than I do, is that construed as possession in your understanding?
Yeah, that would be. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, Representative Stoltz. It's AS 61-200A1. They refer to each other. What it says on the violates It's misconduct involving weapons in the second degree, if the person knowingly, and then one is the commission of the crimes, and two is violates 1161-200A1, which is knowingly possessed it and was a felon. I guess to explicitly answer yours, I'm going to need a little more time. I know on three, though, because we've dealt with that a bunch when we were doing HB 102, the concealed carry don't need a permit. There's really some problematic applications of that three, that target practicing one. And I think you're right, but I'd have to check it out some more.
Okay, we'll come back to that. Representative Holm?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With regards to two, for a two, my question has to do with whether or not a hunting application may fall in under this. For example, I remember as a boy, I always hunted with 22s, and if we flushed a grouse and ran up on the roof, we shot him off the roof. Now, would that justify somebody waiving you to adult status to say that you somehow inappropriately shot towards a building and maybe threaten someone because you did so?
Go ahead.
Through the chair, Representative Holm, are you talking about subsection 3, the discharge firearm?
Subsection 2 is this, when the firearm was discharged under circumstances manifesting substantial and unjustified risk of physical injury to a person or
Actually, I'll defer to Mr. Newman.
Through the chair, Representative Holm, the bill here talks about when the firearm is discharged under circumstances involving substantial risk when it's discharged from a propelled vehicle. In that particular,
the two in this particular one is a propelled vehicle.
Yes.
Okay.
Representative
Croft. Yeah, but that, I mean, so. A propelled vehicle is anything. It's not just cars, it's anything. So you shoot from your boat, from your snow machine, and if a jury finds there was that risk they defined here, but you shot carelessly, you shot where you shouldn't have. Again, I'm not justifying these behaviors, but they're already illegal. We're just asking whether they should be in the automatic waiver section. And there's a lot of situations where you discharge a gun from a vehicle where you shouldn't have and should be in trouble. There's also some that are much closer to the line justifiable. Yeah.
Through the chair, we could have just this dialogue for a moment here. And the reason I say this, too, is also we shot many times from vehicles. If you're going down the old road, you have a pickup truck, and you're out there grouse hunting or whatever. And whether it's legal or illegal, the point here is whether or not you want to remand somebody to adult status because they make a lack of good judgment. And we know that minors don't always exercise good judgment. And so I'm thinking out loud. I agree with Representative Croft in the sense that we have to be very careful that we don't pull under this umbrella people that we don't want to fall underneath them for exercising that judgment.
Go ahead.
Through the chair, Representative Holm, I agree that we have to be careful, but I think the language and the actual application of it would be much more towards drive-by shootings in Anchorage than, the rural areas. And I think in those fact scenarios that you've described, I think the prosecutors would, be able to exercise some discretion in what they charged the juvenile with initially. If it was the type of event that you described, they may elect to charge with a lesser crime, some other crime, or not at all. So there is some flexibility built into the system for what to charge.
I think what we'll do here, Randy, Representative Cross, I think you brought up a very, very good point. I'd like for you to, for you and I and Suzanne, get together and bring this back to see us and have a little more time to think about it. So if you're okay with withdrawing your amendment for now?
Sure, I'll withdraw my amendment.
Okay. And with that, we'll hold this bill over, and we are going to adjourn until 4:30, and then we'll start the public hearing on the operating budget. Let's see. 4:30 to 6, we have a public hearing on the operating budget. This is primarily well, it is just Anchorage, and then tomorrow we have a start at 1:30. We'll have Juneau and Fairbanks, 1:30 to 6. And then then again Saturday. Okay. What's the schedule for Saturday?
Is it on here? No. Yeah.
I think we got one too.
Okay.
I'll come see you.
Yeah, Saturday at 9 a.m. And we do everything. We do all the rest. All right. Hey, Ellen, hold on. Let's hold on for just a second.
A copy's been forwarded to everybody's office in the email schedule, and I wanted to explain to people, we have a segment at 2 o'clock as invitational, and what that is we have scheduled communities kind of blind. We don't know how many people will show up. I think our estimates are pretty good, but if we were to get to, say, Dillingham, and we have 20 people waiting to testify, and we're at the end of that time slot, we can say to those people, sorry, we can't get to you now. You can come back at 2 p.m. We have your names, and we'll take you then, so that we can kind of keep on our schedule and not let all the other communities get behind. Hopefully, we won't need to do that, and we'll be done at 1. But just in case, we have that option. And also, I would put out a plea for people to be timely, so we can start right away and keep to the schedule. It makes a big difference.
I'll bring him with me.
Thank you.
All right, very good.
Any other comments for the committee? Seeing none, we're adjourned to 4:30.